Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's great to have you here on the Clark Howard Show. You know, our mission is to serve you with advice and information that empowers you so you make better financial decisions in your life. And in today's show, I'm really sore about something that I just got. It's a home internet bill. One of the alternatives I've talked about has pushed through a price increase. I want to tell you how their new prices work. And I want to talk about how you shop around for home internet. Later, there's a segment of the population who've been completely ignored about financial advice, and it's older women. And I'm going to tell you where the gap is and how I think we should fix that. So I got a notice of my monthly internet bill that has been $70 a month. And it said, we wanted to let you know we're charging your monthly bill, and it's $121. $121. And I thought, what in the world? I may have gotten some kind of email that went into spam. First I knew was $121, and I've been actively shopping, and obviously I'm going to move my internet. And I want to talk about how you go about that process. But also, I've talked a lot about how Verizon, in areas where they don't have monopoly phone service, and T-Mobile around the country and more zips, offer wireless home internet. Both of them offer a much better deal to their wireless phone subscribers than they do to what in their orbit they call non-customers. If you're just getting internet from them. But T-Mobile, that had been a screaming deal, $25 a month for their wireless phone subscribers, $50 a month for people that are not T-Mobile customers, much less than you pay the monopoly phone company or the cable monster. But now T-Mobile is offering wider and wider coverage for their wireless home internet, and along with the wider coverage, more addresses covered. And they got millions of home internet customers now. They've now raised the price a lot. So people that are T-Mobile wireless phone subscribers now pay $40 a month on most T-Mobile plans. And people that are non-customers pay $60 a month. So it's not the screaming deal it was before, but potentially a lot cheaper than you've had elsewhere. And so it's fine for streaming video, for calling. It's fine for pretty much everything, email, web surfing. What it's not good for, if you're a gamer, you are not going to want to use the Verizon wireless home internet or the T-Mobile wireless home internet. Not going to get the job done. If you are somebody who needs ultra, ultra fast internet for a particular purpose, you're not going to want to use either of these, but you should consider both of them. If neither is available where you are, or your need for speed is greater than you're going to get with either of them, then you're left typically with a two-horse race. Some places you might only have a one-horse race. But most places, you'll have the monopoly phone company, the monopoly cable company, what I call the cable monster. And you got to put them in competition with each other. So I have looked up the rates with the monopoly local phone company, and they offer fiber service at my address. I've found a much better deal with them. I'm going to set up an appointment. I'm going to call the cable monster that's gone from 70 to 121. And I'm going to say, hey, look, I got this other deal. Been nice knowing you. I need to disconnect. That's when I'll be sent to the retention department. and I cannot predict the future. I don't know what the retention department will offer me. We'll see if I'm staying or I'm going. But let me tell you, I'm not paying $121 a month for internet that's not even that reliable. The cable monster I have to use, the service is up, it's down, it's up and down. And Chris, wasn't that funny? We were having a big staff meeting last week and suddenly I got a text from you. What did your text say?
We can't see you anymore. You're gone.
You can't hear me.
Couldn't hear you. Yeah.
The internet was down the remainder of the hour we were meeting. And I brought the hotspot live on my cell phone where I have unlimited hotspot. And we continued the meeting with me running from hotspot. That's crazy. So not only did they raise my rate nearly double, but it doesn't even work all the time. That's pretty bad, isn't it?
It's bad.
That's what happens with monopolies.
All right, we'll go to some questions. This one's from Anonymous in California. Hello, Mr. Money Saver. I have two rental properties that I bought in 2018 and 2019 for $300K and $225K respectively.
Wait. Think about how brilliant or lucky or brilliant and lucky that timing was to buy the two rental properties before the big run-up that happened through COVID.
For sure.
Wow.
They give me passive income of $2,000 each, and that's post-tax and HOA fees, insurance, maintenance, management fees, giving me a 4% return. The market value of each property is $400K. Should I sell or continue to receive the rental income?
So the $2,000, I'm trying to understand, is that per month? We don't really know.
Oh, I assumed it was per month, but maybe not. I think it's a month. There's no way it's just that much.
Yeah. Okay. So generally, if the properties are now worth $400K, the traditional formula of how you'd buy a rental property, you would have a good argument for selling because you want the rent to be equivalent to about 1% per month of what the fair market value is. You say you're clearing $2,000, you know, by calling it passive income. I'm gathering you're clearing $2,000 a month, which means your gross rental income must be higher. I don't have enough information here to give a solid answer, but you bought at very low prices on these. You have embedded capital gains. They may be a good pair of properties to keep because you're in at so low a cost. On the other hand, if you don't like being a landlord and you just hate dealing with the tenant calling and saying this is broken or that's broken or whatever, if being a landlord is not the joy you thought it would be, then that would be a good argument for selling because you've had these very nice gains in a relatively, extremely short period of time. And I don't believe that real estate is going to increase over the next decade anything like it did in a relatively short window. So I'm going around circles here. If you want to go with a traditional measurement, if you're getting close to $4,000 a month gross rent per month, then it would make absolute compelling sense to keep the two rental properties. If on the other hand, your actual rent you're receiving is substantially less than that, I'd say less than $3,000 a month, that would make the argument stronger and stronger to consider selling these two properties.
John in Michigan says, every year I find out that someone who had worked on my wheels, brakes, or tires torqued the lug nuts wrong and didn't tell me. The repair can cost $50 to $100. I'm beginning to think I should forget tire rotations on older tires, remove the hubcaps before taking the car in so I can see if the studs and lugs are intact. There was an article in Pop Mechanics saying the need to be hand torqued and not to trust torque sticks or air wrenches, which busy shops use. This makes no sense to me, but I assumed you would know.
It makes perfect sense to me because this has actually been a problem I've heard about before. Okay. Right. So there's need for speed in tire centers. So they're using power tools to remove the lug nuts and put them back on the tire. And there are times that they will overdo it, putting them back on. And they can also, in certain cases, strip them, other things. So if you're changing a tire yourself, you're using a manual one to do it. And you're not going to be able to over tighten to cause harm. And you're not going to strip anything. As to whether it'd be a good idea to pop off the hubcap so that you can see before you accept the car at the tire center that they've been properly tightened, I would do that. Not rotating your tires, I don't recommend that.
Ben in Michigan says, I'm in the market for a new cashback credit card. He names a card.
Please go ahead and name this card. I'm familiar with it.
The Upgrade Cash Rewards Elite card offers 2.2% cash back on everything, but it isn't listed on Clark.com as one of the recommended best cashback cards. It appears to have a non-standard payment mechanism where any balance you carry is considered a loan that then takes on specific installment payments. Do you mind sharing your input on this card?
Yeah, so this card, ignore the rewards. This card is basically where you're waiving grace period on charging on a card. It is very, very different than other credit cards. This is for a specialized kind of situation. Someone who knows they're not going to be able to pay a balance in full. If the interest rate on this card, because it's an installment rate, you know what it's going to be. If the interest rate is lower than the prevailing rate on a traditional, what's known as revolver, a revolving credit card, then this card could work for you in that situation. You would never want to use this card, though, if you routinely pay your balance in full. You would never want to use it if you are getting a better interest rate on a regular card you have than you would have on this. Some people in reviews I've read like this card because with this card, you're put into an installment plan, which means the balance must be paid off in a set amount of time. With a traditional revolving credit card, the whole design of it is to keep you in debt forever, that you never pay off the balance. They never put you on a glide path to pay off your balance. They want you to stay deep in debt forever. So that is a difference with this card, Ben. It's a specialized alternative to a traditional credit card for somebody who knows they can't pay a balance in full, knows the interest they're being charged is less than they're being charged elsewhere, and knows they need the discipline of having a set time to pay that balance off in full. So it's not a good card. It's not a bad card. It's a specialized card for a specific set of individual circumstances. And I hope that helps. Coming up ahead, I want to talk about a real gap in the marketplace. Women live longer than men and have less money available to live that longer life. It's a tough road, and the information out there is not really serving women as it needs to, and we're going to talk that through.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
I'm about to talk about something that is not designed to depress you if you are a woman. This is to motivate you and educate you. The stats are not very friendly. Women live on average 6 years longer than men. Some measurements say 7 years, but let's just call it six. And women have interruptions in the years of work that men don't often face, usually because of kids or taking care of elderly parents. You can have a family of four adult boys, one adult woman, and the adult daughter is the one expected to take care of aging parents, not any of the four adult sons. I mean, it's just the way it is. The caregiving culturally falls on women, pulling them hours out of the workforce or even periods of time not in the workforce with the responsibility for kids and aging parents. And so women earn less over time, get promoted less because of the time in and out of the workforce, and end up making less money, have six more years to pay for. And a study that was done at USC, University of Southern California, found that women are much less knowledgeable about finance than men. Men know quite a bit more, and women tend to default to savings, not investing. Over time, investing is where the real money is made. The compounding of money that you put aside is so much greater over the years, even with the ups and downs of investing, the return so much greater. Oh, and then there's one other thing. An average woman's Social Security check is 20% lower than a man's. Why? Again, because of those caregiving things that women do that make them fall behind in earnings. And your last 35 years of work, I think it is, establishes what you get from Social Security. So all these problems, lack of knowledge, a tendency to save instead of invest, more lifespan and less money coming in, I mean, it can lead to impoverishment in later years for women. It's just a fact. 40% of women, according to the USC study, 40% of women have never invested. Never. And women overwhelmingly don't feel comfortable with looking at the financial future because, well, these dark clouds I just described. So facts are facts, right? So what do you do about it? At whatever age and stage you are listening to me, you need to think about investing a portion of what you make. I mean, if you are earning so little at a job that you're having trouble putting food on the table, then this conversation is not for you. But if you're getting by and you're dealing with today, I want you also to think about tomorrow and well past tomorrow. And that's why I'm the man from Roth. If you work at a job that has a 401k and there's a Roth investment version available of it, I want you in it. I want you to go into the target retirement fund choice for the year closest to when you expect to bag work. Put your money in there. And that means in your early years, money will overwhelmingly be in stock type choices and you won't have to pick them. It's done for you. And later in life, it's a more conservative portfolio, but still with stock exposure all the way through the rest of your life, because you got to deal with inflation after you're not working anymore. And whatever point you're at, when you start is when you start. And you put money in. If you feel like there's no room in your life, you feel like you're wheezing financially, follow my 1 cent rule. Put in 1 cent of every dollar you make into that employer-provided plan. And then 6 months later, go up another cent. If you do it gradually, over 5 years, you'll be saving a dime of every dollar you make. And doing it in 6 month increments, you really can adjust gradually to doing that. And you're picking up whatever employer match there is that is a booster shot to the money you are investing. Investing, not saving. Do not fear the down years, because the natural progression of the free market is people who start businesses want to make money. They want to come up with a better way to do something, a more efficient way to do it, a more profitable way to do it with a service or a product. And over time, your wealth will grow because you become a part owner of those enterprises. Know that this is something not to wait till tomorrow on. I want you to get started on saving and investing for tomorrow today.
Something I also wanted to mention is if you're married and you're not working, you can do a spousal IRA, a spousal Roth IRA. And a lot of people don't realize they can do that. And I also just want to say, because I've seen this happen to a lot of women, that you should definitely try to have access to all of your accounts. If you're married, you should have insight into everything, all the logins. And like you and Lane, I know, go through your accounts regularly and look at where everything is. It's just, I've seen people, including my mother, who have no idea how to access anything. And if something were to happen and you're on your own with it, it's just, I think it's just good to have the knowledge anyway and just be a participant. Because I've seen some people who sort of buried their head in the sand, like, I don't need to handle that. But it really is important to know what's going on.
Well, sure. When my dad died, I was at a fairly young age, a young adult. My mom had zero knowledge of their finances and had zero credit in her own name. And she never understood. And she became really vocal about this, how important it is for women to know what there is and to make sure that women had their own credit identity as well as their partner. And so this is important stuff. Now, I only talked about Roth 401k. If you work at a place or you run your own business and you don't have a traditional employer retirement plan, you can do the Roth IRA I always talk about. We have a simple guide to setting one up at clark.com and starting to put money into it. If you own your own business, there are other vehicles saving for retirement that even if you're older, you are allowed with those to shovel enormous amounts of money in if you are self-employed. There are a variety of plans, including a self-employed or solo 401k. That's for one person company that allows you to set up a Roth and put, I mean, giant amounts of money in if your business is really profitable. And if you have employees, you can set up a very simple thing known as a SEP, where you put money aside for you and your employees as well. So you're both building money for the future.
All right, we'll go to questions. Beth in Illinois says, I'm so happy to see you addressed how to delete Google information. That was on clark.com. Yet I hesitate because we've been hearing for a long time that Google tracks everything, everything. Can we really trust a website that offers data deletion going backwards and ongoing in the future? Or is this trickery to pull us into something even more sinister and damaging where our privacy is concerned? Thanks a lot.
So Beth, if we freaked you out about Google, know there are alternatives. As a browser, you can look at, an example, the Brave browser. There are email services you can use that are very private that we've talked about before. And you can do things to avoid using Google as search. Google dominates search. You can use DuckDuckGo, which from the beginning was built as an alternative to the privacy invasion that's built into Google search. So there are things you can do, and I'm not trying to make you paranoid when we write about this at clark.com. The point is for you to know, and if you are a Google user, that you should fix these privacy settings that we've shown you how to do online. Or you could consider using different email, different search, different browser, because there are now a number of choices that do protect your privacy. Email, I've had a ProtonMail account for years. You have a ProtonMail, don't
you?
No. Mm-hmm. ProtonMail is especially private for people where both parties download it. It's Swiss, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. And it is very protective of communications and privacy.
Alex in Texas says, Mr. Howard, as a child who grew up...
You're going to say that.
Well, that's what Alex is trying to be polite. Okay. As a child who grew up listening to you in my parents' old 1990s Honda Accord, you should take pride in how many people you have impacted over the years. I am 30 now, working with a government salary as my income source. I own a home at 2.85% that I rent out. I have almost $200K invested between my Roth TSP and Roth IRA account. I have never had any debt besides a mortgage and purchased I-bonds throughout the year as my emergency savings account. Somewhat unexpectedly, I will soon be stationed outside the USA for around 3 years. I set aside almost $40K in savings for a home down payment that is no longer needed in the near future. What are some good mutual funds or ways that I can invest the money for a future liquidation in around 5 years? And to all the listeners, you don't need a fancy salary with weird Insta Snapgram side hustles. Focus on what is important. Live well below your means. Student debt is avoidable. And anyone worth knowing doesn't care what kind of car you drive. So great.
Alex, also thank you for all that inspiration and motivation for your fellow listener or viewer. And thank you for your service to our country. It's clear reading between the lines that you're going to serve our nation somewhere overseas on a multi-year deployment or tour. And I'm grateful to you for being there for your fellow Americans. As far as where you'd put the money, if you don't put it in savings, the money you have towards the down payment, you could put it 5-year window. I'm going into an area that I have to be very nervous talking about, but the alternative that is a recommended system is that you put a big chunk of it in savings. Savings is earning a decent rate of interest right now, and the rest you put into a total stock market index fund. It operates as something that protects you downside. If you put in a typical formula, you'd put 70, 75, or 80% of the money in savings, and the other 20 to 30% goes into a total stock market index fund. You get the potential upside of how the market would do over the next 5 years. And at the same time, you have downside protection that should help you at least break even with this money. If the stock market has a terrible next 5 years, you put a big chunk of it in savings, giving you the downside and the upside with no crazy commissions that a lot of salespeople would try, investment salespeople and insurance salespeople would try to sell you.
John in New York says, I frequently see guidance telling me I should have X times my salary saved. But how does that account for promotions and merit increases? This is a good problem to have, but contribution caps limit abilities to meet a growing target. How can I account for a moving goalpost when reading X times my salary?
So, John, okay. So the whole idea of you should have X times your salary by this time, by this age of your life, is a goal to reach for. And as long as your mentality is such that you are continuing to put aside and invest and you're hitting nice milestones with how much money you have managed to save at 30, at 40, at 50, at 60, you're doing what you're supposed to do. This is art, not science. The whole idea is to give you a goal to reach, because the idea of having at different stages of your life having so many times your salary saved, and really that means invested for your future, is that you have the compound effect over time where the money you already have in there will continue to grow quite nicely. And you look at these charts that show that you get enough years behind you and your money starts growing, not exponentially, but the curve starts bending up nicer and nicer. And that's why you need to have a direction in place where you're X times at different ages, so that when you hit the point you want to retire, you've got enough money there, enough cushion that you'll be fine. Don't freak out about the details about promotions leading to more money later and merit increases and people who get bonuses and all that. Just keep your target going towards X times at each 5 years, 10 years, whatever it is that gives you more peace of mind. And that will guide you whether you need to be putting more money aside. If you're maxing out what you can put in a workplace retirement plan, in an IRA, you can put money in an investment account outside of that. You won't have the tax-free you'd have with Roths, but you'll have tax advantage because you're putting in after-tax dollars. They're growing in that fund. If you're in index funds or ETFs based on indices, indexes, you're growing with virtually no tax. And when you do have to sell those way down the road, doesn't have to be retirement, you're paying very advantageous capital gains tax instead of much higher ordinary income tax like savings are taxed. So that's just an idea, just a direction for you. And you're doing the right stuff. If you're worrying about this, I guarantee you, you're doing good stuff and doing the right stuff to build that long-term financial security. And I hope you have an absolutely wonderful rest of your day. Remember what we're devoted to, you learning ways to save more, spend less, and don't let anyone ever rip you off.